This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
I'll tell you what, man, you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. I love this guy, man.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a beautiful Tuesday in the New York area. It is April 6, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. But we're apart. But we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half, they are your responsibility. Hope you're doing well. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Kind of a letdown of a national championship game. Congratulations to Baylor.
Oh, yeah.
The Knicks just don't have enough, and the Nets have too much with even one of their big stars in. Kyrie Irving took over the game. They beat the Knicks by 2. The Yankees get contributions, home runs from Aaron Judge, a solo shot, just dunked over the wall and right, and a grand slam from Giancarlo Stanton that traveled 471 feet. But I think that today we have to start with your New York Mets with a very, very difficult to swallow loss. They were leading 2-0. The bullpen imploded. Jacob DeGrom started, gave them 6 innings, 77 pitches. They didn't let him pitch the 7th. And just the fundamental flaw in baseball is when you are going to limit your starting pitcher to a certain amount of pitches or innings. And in this case with DeGrom, it was 6 innings. That means that you are asking 3 relief pitchers, at least 3, to get those 9 outs without a hiccup. And the Mets didn't have it. Aaron Loop didn't have it. Trevor May, 2 of their acquisitions over the offseason to get their bullpen better, didn't have it. A lot of questions with this game, Don, but I am going to simply hand the ball off to you and let you have at it because I know you were watching the game and that loss probably bothered you a lot.
Well, listen, there's 2 separate things at play here, all right? The loss, of course, bothered me because this is a divisional opponent. You wait all year. You got a 2-0 lead, and you've got the lead going into the 8th, and then it all falls apart. But, hey, there's 161 of these games left. I'm not going to get crazy over a loss. It bothers me to no end, but you can't get crazy off of 1 game. But it's why it happened that drives me crazy, and the ultimate point of why I'm really falling out of love with this sport. I mean, this was the sport for me growing up. It's the sport that I played. It was the sport that I played well. My dad coached me in Little League, went to all of my high school games. We bonded over the Mets. You know, teaching me how to throw, catch. It's quintessential America, right? Love all the sports, but the baseball's inside of you when you're from this country because it's the one sport everybody can play. Whether it's wiffle ball, stick ball, some form of baseball I played my entire life. I don't know what I'm watching now. I don't know what I'm watching because what I'm watching now is nowhere close to the sport that I fell in love with. I fell in love with Kate Upton. I'm now looking at a morbidly obese old woman. It's not even the same stratosphere. And I didn't fall in love with the Mets because they were good. The Mets were awful. I was too young to remember 73. So I remember 75, 76, 77, 78, some of the worst baseball. But I still loved it because I got to watch Tom Seaver. I got to watch Kuzman. I got to watch even Craig Swan, who wasn't a great wins and loss pitcher, but he would be second in earned run average. He was a good pitcher. You know, Pat Zachary, whatever. I'd watch players. My dad would point out players to me. So Marco's not old enough to watch the game with me and understand. How do you explain to a 12-year-old why Jacob DeGrom's coming out of the game after 77 pitches? 77! And don't lie to me after the game. Well, he hadn't pitched in 10 days. It was during the game they said he's good for 90 to 100, and he doesn't come out for the 7th inning? Well, what's going on here? I want to enjoy the sport. I never saw a sport shoot itself in the foot.
I don't enjoy it because of the decisions they make. I'm sorry. It's game one. I'm not thinking about a championship. I'm not thinking about this deep into the summer. I'm thinking about enjoying myself with tons of competition. I got Knicks Nets. I got the national championship game. I got the Yankees playing. I got an overtime hockey game that I could watch. But I'm watching the Mets because that's my team, and I'm enjoying Jacob deGrom pitch, and he took him away from me. For what? We're preparing for the World Series? Can we get out of April? Can we win a game? I'm preparing my pitcher for the long haul. Oh, Donnie's got to be ready for the postseason. Can we get there? Can we get to the All-Star break? For God's sakes, can we get through the first game of the season? I'm enjoying myself. I want to watch a game. He's the best pitcher in baseball, and you took him from me. I'm supposed to enjoy the sport and have some fun. What's fun about that? What other sport does that? Zibanejad could go out there and score 6 goals tonight. You think they're taking him off the ice in the third period to stop from scoring 7? Because there's an important game coming up on Thursday. We don't want to wear him out. Did they pull Kyrie last night when he's going for 40 points? Hey, listen, it's the Knicks. We got bigger fish to fry. Let him play. It's the entertainment business, people. Why in God's name would a 12-year-old kid sitting with his dad enjoy that? Why is that fun? Falling out of love with the sport. Falling out of love. I got too much else going on in my life. I try to invest to watch the best pitcher in baseball, and you took him from me. And in my eyes, for no reason. Zero. Take your analytics and shove them right up your rectum. Right up your... Jam it up! I'm tired of it. I invested my life in this sport, and they're the one. It's a self-inflicted wound. It's not the pandemic. It's not kids don't enjoy baseball because they don't want to play because it's boring. Baseball's doing it to themselves, and they can't even change the rules because they can't get along with each other. Sickening. So lose the game, I'll get over it. But what's there to enjoy when the best pitcher in baseball is snatched from me for no reason? Zero reason. Dumb.
Well, it's interesting because I think that a fundamental problem in baseball – let's take a look at basketball, okay? Fourth quarter, last minute of the game, Lakers are down by 1. LeBron James or Anthony Davis, they are going to have the ball in their hand. In baseball, your best players might not even come up in the 9th inning. You could sit there for an hour before your favorite player, before Aaron Judge comes up again. And then what Don's saying with the pitch counts, they handle pitchers – with such kid gloves now. And you know what gets me, Don? Pitchers have never been hurt more. They've never been hurt more. All of these rigid pitch counts, and all we get is Tommy John, Tommy John, Tommy John. Not the underwear, the surgery. Every single one of them gets it, and they're all handled as if they're delicate pieces of china. It's amazing. It's amazing. And then what got me was that DeGrom agreed. And I don't think that he was just going along with it. I think he agreed while he hadn't pitched until. I thought he was throwing on the side. And as Don said, they kept saying he's good for 90 to 100. Now, I was in my car when they blew the lead. And I got to tell you what. I'm listening to Howie and Wayne, and they went up and in on the Mets. They really did. I give them credit.
What'd they say?
They crushed them for taking out DeGrom as the lead is evaporating there in the 8th inning. And then you know what else? And this was the thing that I brought up yesterday. It was inconceivable, A, that they didn't start their best hitter from last year, Dominic Smith, in the opening game of the season because the Phillies were starting a – right now he's a journeyman left-hander, Matt Moore. Okay, so let's put that aside. So Matt Moore gets into trouble in the 4th inning. The Mets have a 2-0 lead. So, Peter, they have the bases loaded, and coming up is Kevin Pillar.
Okay.
So they bring in the right hand of Brandon Kinsler. He doesn't bring up Dominic Smith there?
Yeah.
Wait, so now
are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't understand.
So what you've done is you've doubled down on your mistake. And the reason is, well, you know, we have to worry about defense, so if I had pinch hit Smith, then I'd have to bring in Albert or Mora, and I didn't want to use two players that early in a National League game. Well, here's the inherent problem if you're the Mets. And I've told you from the very beginning, from February, Don and Peter will back me up. The defense on this team is a gigantic issue. If there's one team in baseball that is really hurt by no DH, it's the Mets, because it actually weakens them at three separate positions. So you're telling me you didn't think that Dominic Smith could come up and hit a grand slam and maybe just break the game open. You don't have to worry about defense. We're at 6-0 in that ballpark at Citizens Bank Park. You don't decide to do it then. Okay. When are you going to feel comfortable with Dominic Smith's defense?
What? Why is he on the team then?
Yeah. He shouldn't be on the team, because if you can't be comfortable with your best hitter from last year in the field, then you're either going to have to play him or you're going to play Pete Alonso. That's it. They can't play at the same time, right? Because you only trust him at first base. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. Matt Moore makes you sit down Dominic Smith, and then they give the excuse, well, you know what? It's because of defense. And then Howie and Wayne, I tell you what, they just drilled the Mets. They said there's no reason that Dominic Smith should not have been in the game, A, in the starting lineup, and then B, there's no reason he should not have pinch hit in the fourth inning. Listen, he only had 60 games last year, Don, and you watch the Mets a lot more than me. I'm not sure about Rojas. I know it's just one game here, but when his excuse about not pinch hitting him, you know what he said? Well, we all talked about in the dugout, the coaches agreed. That's not a coach's decision. Well, that's a manager's decision.
Here's the thing. Analytic, whatever it is, there's inconsistency. All right? He's good for 90 to 100 pitches. Oh, but you can't go by the six. What the heck's an inning? What does an inning matter? You go to – he's had 77 pitches. Work to the 90 to 100. Because if you're so concerned about winning the game and protecting the lead, doesn't he give you the better option than anybody going to throw in the bullpen? And with 77 pitches, there's a chance, because he had retired 9 in a row after the Harper walk, there's a good possibility he can get you through 8 without getting to 100 pitches. Then you go to Diaz and you close out the game, right? So there's the inconsistency there, because all of a sudden the sixth inning, oh my, we can't go by the sixth inning. We can't. Now it's a different world. Now we got to go to our bullpen in the seventh inning. If Dominic Smith is such a butcher in the outfield, then don't play him against the right either. What does it matter?
That's right. He can't play then. That's a great point, Don. He's never going to be a good defender in left field. Right. It's not his fault, by the way. He's a first baseman.
Because if Philadelphia started a righty, he plays the outfield.
Great point. Yep.
So don't tell me about his defense. Right now, your objective is to protect the two-run lead. And there's two ways to do that. All right? Don't give up any more runs or add. And you had a chance to add. Now you have the righty on the mound. You bring up Dominic Smith. Grand slam, base hit, whatever. Add to the lead. So there's inconsistent. What are you doing? So we haven't had the order yet. If there's a righty on the mound today, then Dominic Smith's out there. So don't tell me about his defense. His defense all of a sudden got better in one day? All of a sudden, because there's a righty starting, his defense is better? Give me a break. It's just the inconsistency, whether it's Rojas, whether it's the Mets analytics. There's no consistency to what they're doing.
And then they play word games. It's not that DeGrom gave us six innings. Well, he gave us six up. Stop it! Stop being impressed with yourself. Stop trying to reinvent the language in the game. He gave us six ups. He gave you six innings. So now it's called six ups, because that means he got up off the dugout bench six times.
Oh, my God.
That's it, Peter. They're reinventing the wheel, and they're pissing the people off that care about the game.
Peter, honestly, and you're the perfect person to ask this, because you're not, like, baseball's not ingrained in your soul like it is for Michael and I. It's almost as if they're designing it to get you not to watch. Right? I mean, they're trying to make it as boring and uneventful as possible. It's by design. It's ridiculous. And when hockey was in that situation with the dead puck era, with the left wing lock and the trap, they changed it. They removed the red line. They put the trapezoid behind the net. They changed everything. And you know why they changed it? Because they had to shut down a season to do it. And then the two sides came together. Is that ever going to happen in baseball? Oh, they'll cancel a season, but will they come together to make the necessary changes? Peter, how is it interesting? It's almost like they're the ones that are making it uninteresting. They're talking a different language. I thought you're trying to get people interested in the sport. It's six ups. Give me a break.
You know, I had to stare at that sentence for 30 seconds to figure out what the heck he was talking about.
And that's been such a thing over the last few years. The language changing, the statistics that they focus on, everything is like they're reinventing this sport when the only thing they're reinventing it for is making it soft and stupid. DeGrom, 77 pitches over six innings. If the number they said was 90 to 100, he was right in pace. Even if he'd stuck to his average pitches per innings last night, they could have gotten another inning from him.
Could have gotten another inning. Then you use Castro in the eighth inning. Then you bring in Diaz in the ninth. And maybe the result's different. I give them credit for being a resilient, tough team because they did rally with two outs in the ninth inning. And Alonso hit a ball to right field that you thought was out, but it was run down right at the warning track by Bryce Harper. That's a game they should have won. And the Mets always win on opening day. So now they don't win on opening day. And Steve Cohen's probably sitting at home and going, well, what is this?
But and he's your star. DeGrom's your star.
He's the star of baseball. He's the best pitcher in the game.
And he took him out after 77 pitches. And I was having a conversation with Andrew, and Andrew's trying to talk me off the ledge because I'm screaming before the show starts. And, you know, the devil's advocate thing will be, like, listen, they want him to be able to build up his innings so that he can go deeper in games later on. Well, the what? So they can do what they did with Snell last year in Tampa and just find a reason to pull him out of a big game in the playoffs because you're so hot to get to this bullpen? How do I know it's going to be any different? It's the first game of the season. Listen, I love the fact that you think you're going to be a great team and that you're preparing. You got bigger fish to fry, but it's the first game of the season. You know how many ups and downs there are in a baseball season? This isn't the NFL. It's 162 of these suckers.
Wait, when you say ups and downs, do you mean innings or do you mean highs?
Yeah, I think he might six ups,
no,
six downs.
I said ups and downs, like the actual roller coaster that is
got
the baseball season.
Emotional, sure.
All right, Six ups. Talk
we're
going to
make
like,
you happy. Oh, even if you're upset about the Met loss, we're celebrating our new 2 p.m. start time by Don going off today and by giving away $10,000 in the month of April. So starting yesterday and beginning today and continuing today, later in the 2 p.m. hour, be listening for the K-Cash Sounder. And here is said Sounder. See ya! See ya! See ya! And be ready to call in at 888-987-ESPN to claim $500 cash. It's all from your home for the hookup, 987-ESPN. Again, a point of warning. It's not the number you call in to talk with us, so don't bother Andrew and try to get ahead of everybody else. We could hit the sounder in a minute. We could hit the sounder in 10 minutes. We can hit the sounder in 20 minutes. It will be in the 2 o'clock hour, but you have to wait until the sounder, and then you call 888-987-ESPN. Got it?
Got it.
Yankees have made a deal, according to Jeff Passan, and it's an interesting acquisition. A guy who used to be an unbelievable player for the Texas Rangers. Jeff is reporting the Yankees have acquired Rougned Odor from the Rangers. Didn't make the team this year, so they've been looking to trade him. But this guy used to be, you know, bordering on a star.
Right.
And he's also the guy who punched out Jose Bautista.
That's right. So if you get in a brawl, this is the guy you want.
This is the guy you want. Now, I wonder if he's going to just make the Yankees, and that means somebody on the team is not going to be here. But we'll see. Rougned Odor, according to Passan. All right, so, Donnie, what do you think? You want to hear from the fans? Because I think just looking at Twitter right now, people are in lockstep with you.
Well, I'm sorry, like so early in the show, you gave me the floor, and I've been thinking about this all day. It's been on my mind all day. I text you guys. And I don't know if I came in too hot. I didn't even get a response from anybody.
I've been asleep since I last talked to you guys. So
I'm sorry.
I woke up and I managed to get in the horrifying championship game, a piece of the Yankee game, and the end of the Knicks Nets. Besides that, though, I've been asleep from that Johnson & Johnson shot nonstop.
But you don't feel poorly, right? You just feel tired.
No, I felt poorly. I feel good right now. I felt poorly last night. I felt poorly this morning. Doing hot was not fun. And then when I knocked out again after hot for another few hours, I woke up pretty good.
Now, how about this part of the Odor thing? Jeff is reporting that Texas is expected to absorb almost the entirety of the $27 million owed to Odor. He's due $12 million this year, $12 million next year, and a $3 million buyout on a $13 million club option in 2023. Wow.
What's the logic behind that?
I guess they just want him out the door, or Odor.
Oh, the Odor, yeah.
Wow, we got a lot to talk about today.
That sounds like a very odorous contract.
Ooh.
That the Texas Rangers are absolving there.
Wow. All right, let's go to Fred in Hempstead. Fred started off on the show. Freddie.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. Excellent. I don't believe I got through. I'm a first-time listener in a long time.
Well,
Don, what you said was 200% correct. I'm a 57-year-old man. I've been a Mets fan since 6 years old. I go back where my father's father and me used to watch baseball games along with my brother in the living room. Love the Mets. Now that the game has changed, I'm sitting here in my truck in New York City, and when Don started, I said, this is the day that I have to get through. And so surprising I did. My sport now is fishing. They took me away from it.
Well, I mean, you didn't exactly pick an exciting sport, though, now, Fred.
Yeah, Mike, it depends what you're fishing for. I've been married for 22 years, and I tell my wife all the time, why you go fishing so much? I'm trying to catch a mermaid.
Okay.
Hey, Pete, I just want to say I love you, man. You're a good guy, and when people dog you about doing this and that, I just say, you know, tell them to go kick rocks.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
That's good. And, Mike, you're the man. But, Don, what you said today, baby, I'm with you 200%.
Yeah, it's
the game is just totally taking me out of it. You guys, as always, have a great day and love you guys. Be good.
Good luck fishing,
thanks,
Fred.
Man.
I had that feeling I had in the World Series last year, guys. Like, I just felt like I was robbed of a great performance.
What I would like to sit and talk to all of the analytic people, right, that have come up with a number or being careful with pitchers, then why do they keep getting hurt? Why do they keep – every one of them, every single pitcher gets hurt. It didn't happen in the past. Now, obviously, maybe they tore ligaments in their elbow and they just kept pitching through it. There was no union and, you know, they had to pitch in order to earn a living. But every one of them gets hurt, so all the protection you're giving them is not working. If I owned a team, if I was the GM of a team, you know what I would do? In the minor leagues, because they are babied in the minor leagues. They are not allowed to work out of jams. They're taken out of the fifth inning of a game no matter what. They're pitching seven innings today no matter what. I'm going to toughen them up. And then when they get to the big leagues, I'm going to have pitchers that could pitch into the seventh without a problem. So I don't have to use three or four guys and hope that they all are on that day in order to get the final outs of the game. The Mets couldn't do it yesterday. Trevor May couldn't do it. Aaron Loop couldn't do it. Miguel Castro did it. He pitched a great seventh inning. They take him out, then they go to May, and May didn't have it. It's a joke.
Yeah, you're so right, Michael, because now I got to get nine outs. And I'm going to have to probably do it with at least three pitchers. So all just one guy has to be off. Just one.
That's right. Especially with a 2-0 lead.
And if it's the first one, then it doesn't matter because everybody's high on Diaz, right? You didn't even get to him.
Amazing. All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We're going to let Don actually is going to shower off between commercials. Yeah, and then he'll shower off before he gets back on the air. But we'll take your phone calls. I know a lot of people want to talk. We're here for you. Yankee win, Net win, Baylor win, a lot of stuff to do. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Matt Moore!
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Your New York Mets with a very, very difficult to swallow loss.
It's why it happened that drives me crazy and the ultimate point of why I'm really falling out of love with this sport.
I'm thinking about enjoying myself with tons of competition. I got Knicks Nets. I got the national championship game. I got the Yankees playing. I got an overtime hockey game that I could watch. But I'm watching the Mets because that's my team and I'm enjoying Jacob deGrom pitch and he took him away from me. For what? We're preparing for the World Series? Can we get out of April? Can we win a game? I'm supposed to enjoy the sport and have some fun. What's fun about that?
The Michael K. Show.
Jam it up. I'm tired of it.
On 98.7 ESPN.
I never thought that when I woke up today that in the first segment of the show that Don, I'm not going to repeat exactly what he said, but he actually used in a sentence the word rectum. So, and it wasn't W-R-E-C-K-E-D. It was the body part, rectum. He used it, and
I think
he used it beautifully. Yeah, it was a clinical usage, I think.
Yeah, we won't revisit it, but
we can't. I don't think it did happen.
I do appreciate Anthony for letting that natural thing occur where you are sometimes allowed to go there, but you don't want to overdo it.
You almost wonder
so many
whether,
ways to go with that.
You almost wonder whether it should live on as a drop, a bleeped out drop. That's how good it was.
I'm going to check with Andrew here. The way Don used that, was that bleeped on the radio? It was not. Beautiful.
Was that a blunt?
I've had at least three people, Don, text me in the last couple of days. And Peter, I don't know if you have as well. People were stunned. They were alarmed. And they were a little bit wobbly when Don just came on the air and said he dropped acid as a kid. People could not believe that you revealed that about yourself. And I mean, big time people texted me.
Well, we don't know if it's true or not. It might have just been for effect.
No, but you're not that kind of talk show host.
If you listen to the audio, it sounds very honest.
And real.
It sounds like you were just having a moment when you felt like sharing with the world.
And you know what I thought about? I thought about your mom listening. Where did I go wrong?
No.
Has she brought it up to you?
No. So let's just drop it.
Because you think you could still get yelled at about it right now?
No, I'm a 53-year-old man, and there was no mistakes made. It just this is the life we live.
Wow. So all the fans, and I'll do air quotes, which I hate. By the way, my kids like know about air quotes now, and they use them at the exact wrong time. So I said to the person, "Do you have a chair?" That's not when you use air quotes, Callie. And you can't explain what it's about, but she knows air quotes. She just drops them in at the wrong time.
Well, don't worry. Most people use it the wrong way, so they're fitting right in.
Beautiful. All right, so all the fans that were at the opener, and they booed Stanton, I don't know, in the seventh inning. So when he put a ball into orbit last night for a grand slam, it traveled 471 feet. And the guy who called up, "I think they should trade Mike Stanton." Do you realize that that's the seductive part of his game? That he can do that. And if he stays healthy, he will do that. Even he said yesterday, he said, a little bit of an overreaction by the media. I mean, I had 8 at-bats. It wasn't the media, by the way. It was the fans. Any media member who put a lot of import into 0 for 8, I mean, that's kind of a joke. That's not exactly a long stretch. He said, if I had an 0 for 8 in the middle of the season, nobody would even blink. But the first two games, people go nuts. So look at these numbers that were dug up by the Yes staff. All right, so Stanton, when you look at the most home runs in Major League Baseball history per 600 plate appearances all time, with a minimum of 4,000 plate appearances under your belt, the best number belongs to Mark McGwire, 45.7 home runs per 600 plate appearances. Number two is Babe Ruth at 40.3. Number three is Giancarlo Stanton at 37.5. All-time baseball history. All-time baseball history. Now, in terms of, you know, the long ball, the really long one, Stanton has 27 home runs of 450 feet or more in the StatCast era. That goes back to 2015. The next closest player is Carlos Gonzalez, who doesn't play anymore. He had 15, and Nelson Cruz has 15. This is what this guy can do. And by the way, he missed an entire season too. This is what this guy can do when he's right. And when he's healthy, Don, I'm telling you, when he's healthy, he's going to be right. That's the type of player he is. Now, do you think that was the right trade to make? No, I to this day, I don't know why they did it. Other than the fact that they're getting a guy at less than the money that he was being paid by the Marlins, getting him for nothing, players that you had no use for. And they said, okay, he's locked up through this how many years, and he can be this player for us. Now, I thought it kind of copied what Aaron Judge could do, and his contract is going to play a role on who they could sign in the future and whether or not they're going to sign Aaron Judge to a long-term contract. So those are things that you can't ignore. But this guy can play. This guy can hit. He can do damage. And although people rip him, the first year he was with the Yankees, everybody was hurt. That was the year they won 103 games. He had 38 home runs and 100 runs batted in. And he was hurt too, but he played through it. That was a good year. And then he's been hurt the last couple of years. But when he got healthy in the playoffs last year, what did he do? 6 home runs. If the Yankees actually would have actually made the American League Championship Series and then the World Series, can you only imagine how many home runs he would have put up? Every time he came to the plate, he was damaging. That's why you live with it. That's why you live with the fact that you rest him in the third game, because the Yankees' key thing all year, keep this guy healthy, get him into 145 games. You know what's going to happen? He's going to hit you 45 home runs.
Well, and I also think the resting him in the third game was part of the Yankees' awareness of how he looked in the first two games, no? Wasn't it like, why don't we just sit you down here and take, if you're going to take a break anyway, give him a break right now when he looks a little bit lost, and then come back and look what he did. Hits a towering grand slam in game 4.
Well, it's a good way to look at it, but I guess if they're committed early in the season not playing him 5 games in a row, then, yeah, you should rest him after he looked the way he did in the first two games. So collect yourself, well, reset, and boom, you come back and you hit a home run like that.
I think – now, the fans will tell you that they boo him because he stinks, right? And
he
you just
stink.
Outlined how he does not stink, all right? But the reason the fans are irrational about it, Michael, is because – they look at the big picture of this is an awful contract that the Yankees have acquired. They haven't won since he got here. And some of the fans blame the fact that Harper and Machado are not here because Stanton's here. Now, I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but the feeling is that some of the players that they could have acquired aren't here because of Stanton's contract. The reason the Yankees are such a slave to the luxury tax is because of this mistake. So, yeah, he went out and hit a gargantuan home run, helped them win a game 7-0, all right? And he is a good player. But they're going to judge him differently because they haven't won since he's been here, and they believe in their mind the reason why the Yankees are pinching pennies and so conscious about the luxury tax is because of him. Now, whether
really
that's fair or not, I'm not sure,
deep,
but I'm sure that's the reason.
The people that were booing, and, you know, I mean, we had some people who called in that day and it made no sense, but I don't think they're thinking that deep, Don. I mean, I understand what you're saying, that maybe the fan sitting at home that's upset with him probably think, but it's not his fault. It's not his fault. He didn't trade for them. He didn't trade for himself. Darren Revelle just tweeted out that online sports betting is indeed coming to New York. Cuomo has approved it. I just can't say who's offering it and when they will offer it, but there's optimism for the NFL season.
I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? You see
it
the money that New Jersey's been able to make.
Yeah, it should have been done years ago.
You know, nobody knew the pandemic was coming, but it's here. There's so much infrastructure that has to be taken care of. The state needs money. And billions of dollars are being made by these states that have legalized gambling. So I don't know what the holdup is. So I'm glad that it's happening.
There you go. 1-800-919-3776. Also, Jordan Montgomery pitched very well yesterday. 6 innings, didn't walk a batter. I think he struck out 7. Looked really good. And the scouts in spring training, a lot of them were saying, this guy's going to have a breakout season. Boy, if he can do that out of the number 4 spot in the Yankee rotation, that's not a bad pitcher to have. Let's go to Dennis in Huntington. Dennis.
Hey, Michael. I just wanted to say I'm a first lieutenant in the Army.
Oh, I love
really?
It.
Thank you.
Yes, but what you were saying about Stanton, comparing him to Babe Ruth and everything, I know he can hit the ball hard, he can hit it far, but can he hit it when there's a tying run on base or go-ahead run on base? And so far for the Yankees, I mean, I can only count maybe 1 or 2 times that he's done it, and they've all been in the regular season.
The 6 home runs he hit in the playoffs, Dennis, I mean, they had to be important home runs, don't you think?
Not if they were already ahead, but, I mean, it seems like every time he has a home run, it's already a slaughter fest of the game. He doesn't have any Yankee
Well, yesterday he hit a home run, they were up
1-0.
They were up either 1-0 or 2-0, so his home run made it 6-0 or 5-0. I don't get that. Yeah, they were up 2-0. So you can't say that's a tack on home run. That blew the game open. If Dominic Smith had done that in the 4th inning yesterday, you know what? The Mets are winning today. Don doesn't go off on a rant. Let's go to Daniel in Bergen County.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
But Michael, I completely disagree. Stanton hit a 92-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle against Oriole pitching. This is what I'm talking about. Stanton and Judge hit their home runs off terrible pitching, and when the Yankees need them, what do? They can't get the runner over. They strike out. They're worthless in clutch situations. Get rid of both of them.
You're going to get rid of – wait, you want to get rid of Judge, too?
Yeah, because what's going to happen with Judge is you're going to sign him to a Stantonian contract, and he's going to end up like a bum, just like Stanton is now.
And you're a Yankee fan?
I'm a Yankee fan. I think they're both terrible. Name me one offensive player who's been signed to a mega contract that turned out well. Trout is the only one, and he can't even take the Angels to the playoffs.
Who's garbage?
I don't know if you remember Joe Mauer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. But, I mean, you're saying that the Judge – if you're saying don't sign Judge, okay, that's your decision. But Judge is one of the best players in baseball. He's a great defender. He runs the bases well. He hits for average. If he's healthy, he's great. How could you say he's not a good player?
Because he strikes out too much.
But that's the
he
sport.
He strikes out in clutch situations.
Oh, yeah, he never gets clutch hits, ever.
Like you said, he hasn't had a walk-off. He's had plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, but you know, you don't have a walk-off doesn't mean that you don't get clutch hits in the seventh or eighth innings, Daniel. Come on. That's just unfair. The problem with both of these players is staying healthy, but when they're healthy, how do you even doubt their ability? And if Don, is it possible he could have hit six playoff home runs last year and not hit it against a good pitcher?
I'm looking. I'll have it for the next segment. We'll break down the six home runs.
And also, to Daniel, give me a position player that signed a long-term contract where it worked out. Let me think. Derek Jeter? Worth every penny. Every single penny that he earned. So that was a position player, and it was a shortstop. So if you want to say don't give it to a position player, you definitely don't want to give it to a player who plays a demanding position like that. But they did, and it worked out.
Wow. Both. He wants them both gone. Tough
crowd. So who would he like? Who do you like playing? So Mike Tauchman's going to be your everyday right fielder. I mean, yet there's somebody play the field, right? So you never want to pay anybody.
I mean, listen, you don't have to worry about clutch playoff situations when you won't even make the playoffs if you get rid of all the players that make this team what they are.
Unbelievable. Really, really unbelievable.
Judge Anston. Wow.
All right, we're going to, just a heads up, we'll give you the Yankee lineup in just a second. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. That was a weird phone call. Let's go to Ed in Staten Island. Ed.
Hey, Mike. What's going on, brother?
How you doing, man?
Doing good. I called actually a few days ago. I was telling you I was at the game. I was booing Stanton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you're saying, where's all the booers at? I'm right here. I mean, you know, the guy's 1-for-12 to start the year, batting 083. I mean, hitting a grand slam off Jorge Lopez, the guy's got a 6 ERA career. I mean,
off Jorge Lopez, by the way. It was off the relief pitcher.
I'll tell you what, though. At the end of the day, I mean,
if he hits 50 home runs this year, right? Don't cheer because you don't believe in him. Don't cheer. You're booing there because he's 1-for-12. At the beginning of a season, 1-for-12 has actually poisoned you. This is the beginning of the year. If he went 1-for-12 in a weekend series in July, would you even blink? I know fans mean fanatic, but it doesn't mean unintelligent. It doesn't mean uninformed. I mean, how could you be a baseball fan and go crazy over 1-for-12 when it's a 162-game season and the guy's going to come up to bat 600 times? How can you do that and call yourself a fan? You don't know the game. I think everybody is so into football in this country that they think that every single tackle, every single game, every single interception means that you're having a terrible season. There are only 16, there'll be 17 games this upcoming season. This is 162, and why should I cheer him? He's 1-for-12. You don't know the game. Why do you even bother with the game? Ed, I'm sorry I'm not being rude, but you don't know the game. There's so much failure in baseball. If you're a great baseball player, not even good, great, and you hit 370, 370. That means that every 10 times you're making out 6.3 times. You don't know the game. This is a game of failure.
Right. Now, here are his six home runs in the postseason. Okay? Against Cleveland, he had a solo home run to make an 11-2 game, a 12-2 game Yankees.
And who was it against?
So whoever was the obviously it's deep into the bullpen because that was it was an 11-2 game. I'd have to go. I don't have the pitchers.
It's obviously somebody in relief.
All right. I'll get you the pitchers in a second. Then he had a solo home run in a 4-1 game. He hit the grand slam in a 9-3 game. Solo home run tied the game at 1 in the second. Solo home run that made a 5-3 game, a 5-4 game, a game the Yankees eventually lost 7-5. And then he had a solo home run to make it an 8-4 game, a game they eventually lost 8-4. So you could say that there were a few tack-on home runs or home runs that didn't amount to anything, if you want to go there.
Playoff home runs are playoff home runs.
None of them were game winners. The grand slam was pretty important. It was a 5-3 game. He made it a 9-3 game. So that's pretty important.
Let's check out today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Second baseman DJ LeMahieu leads off. Aaron Judge in right. Brett Gardner in center. How about that? Hitting third as Aaron Hicks continues to struggle. Giancarlo Stanton will DH. He'll clean up. Batting fifth, the shortstop Gleyber Torres. Clint Frazier in left field will bat sixth. Batting seventh, first baseman Jay Bruce. Gio Urshela at third base bats eighth. Batting ninth and catching, and I figured they would do this because he's played four games in a row, Kyle Higashioka, and isn't that convenient? He gets to catch Gerrit Cole, who really likes pitching, to Kyle Higashioka. So that's a smart time to rest Sanchez after he's played four games in a row. That's today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Love Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Let's go to Gino in Staten Island. Gino.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just quickly about the whole Stanton thing. I think people need to really calm down. 162 games. I mean, we're going to be in the playoffs. Like, let's just take a breath, relax. But I'm with you 100%. So when the trade happened, I was kind of scratching my head. Like, it doesn't really make sense. But I think maybe what they were thinking, and tell me if I'm wrong, like the Judge came up like what, 26, 25. He was a little bit older. So I'm like, yep. Oh, maybe he had that one good year in 2017. Maybe they weren't 100% sold on Judge. And they're like, look, he's better than we thought. He has some trade value. You know, if he takes a dip, we might be able to trade him. Stan's a couple years older, but he's the MVP. He's proven. He's a National League MVP. Guaranteed. We got a guaranteed guy here. Like, we don't really need both. So, but then Judge became who Judge became. And now we are where we are. I think that may have been a thing, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, here's what I think is the biggest thing, Gino. I mean, some of that might have factored into it, but I think they believed in Judge for sure after 2017. I don't think that they were in love with Harper and Machado. And even if they did like them, they thought that it was going to cost more money than Stanton makes because the way the Stanton contract breaks down with the money that the Marlins sent, which I think was about $50 million, and the fact that they traded the second baseman, Starlin Castro, and his money, the value of Stanton's contract is $24 million a year. And they knew that Machado and Harper were going to be over $30 million. I don't think that they were in love with either player. If they don't get Stanton, they probably have to dive into one of them and pay more money than they're paying Stanton.
Right.
Because Stanton's contract, it seems onerous. But out of the Yankees' pocket is just $24 million a year. And Stanton, even if the Marlins had not signed into that 13-year deal, after he won the MVP, you couldn't have gotten him for $24 million a year. I think that's what Cashman was thinking. I'm getting a great player at a relative bargain.
Now, Cashman didn't help himself with the Harper free agency saying, we're not in because we've got too many outfielders.
Right.
So, and he took that back. But, well, one of the outfielders is Stanton. Well, you could put two and two together. Here are the six pitchers he hit home runs off of in the postseason. Cam Hill, Carlos Carrasco, Phil Maton, John Curtis, Tyler Glasnow.
The best one of the Carrasco's good. Glasnow is outstanding stuff. So those are two pretty good brand names that he hit off of.
So this is where we're at now. The guy hit six home runs.
Record-breaking, by the way.
And how many postseason games? Because they beat Cleveland in two.
And they lost in five. Seven postseason games. So the guy
averaged almost a home run a postseason game, and now we're actually breaking it down into the fine powder of when the home runs were, what the score was, and who the pitcher was. It's not good enough to just say he had six postseason home runs in seven games.
Amazing. This is what we've come to. Absolutely, absolutely amazing. All right, we'll come back. We've got a lot of other things to hit on, including the national championship game, which was kind of a bore. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, so our Jeff Passan broke the story. And now the Yankees have made it official. They have acquired infielder Rougned Odor. They traded two minor league outfielders, Antonio Cabello and Josh Stowers. Here's the interesting thing. In his career, Rougned Odor has only appeared at second base. That's it. So if you're giving thought to, you know, Tyler Wade has an option left, and that could be the spot that they use to bring him up. Well, he's not a guy that could play short and third. Tyler Wade can play that and the outfield. So I'm not sure what the move is going to be now. Maybe the Yankees will move LeMahieu to first and not give Jay Bruce that much time and play Rougned Odor at second. I don't know. And I don't know if he's going to be brought right up to the big leagues or if he'll agree to go down to the minors and work on things. And there really is no minors now. There's just the alternate site until May. But the guy's had three years of over 30 home runs. Only six second basemen have done that in Major League history. But in the last 4 years, he's been a disappointment. But maybe the Yankees see something that they think they could fix. Maybe. We shall see. So it is now official. Rougned Odor is a Yankee. And Rougned Odor has a beard like James Harden's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, once again, we'll see if a player complies. We'll see. I've always wondered what would happen if a guy says no. Randy Johnson said yes. Johnny Damon said yes.
It's hard for me to think that Rougned Odor at this stage of his career is the one to say no.
You're right. You're right. Knicks and the Nets last night. The Nets have a really good performance team, and those are the people that tell you if somebody should play or not, and that's why they've been so careful with Kevin Durant. And it's one of the reasons Kevin Durant really wanted to come to the Nets, because again, their performance team is so good in rehabbing that, you know, they're looked at as top flight around the NBA. But they okayed James Harden to play yesterday, and boom, he's out of the game in a minute. Mm-hmm. And they said that none of the scans showed anything, but it must be something deep, and they took him out, and that pretty much gave the game to Kyrie Irving. And Peter, I don't know how much of the game you saw. He's just special, and that's why you put up with everything else. He's just amazing. He hit a step back shot with Julius Randle guarding him. Just like there was a child guarding him. He can do things that very few players can do. And the Nets, undermanned with just one of the big three, end up winning by two, and losing Harden again. I don't know how long he's going to be out. And the story for the Knicks is this: Julius Randle looks absolutely exhausted. He's missed one game, and he's playing with a thigh injury. R.J. Barrett has not missed any games, and you can see they're starting to suck wind a little bit. And Randle had a look in the a chance to win the game, and just didn't have the lift on the shot, and he wants to continue to play, and I give him credit for that. But the bottom line with the Knicks, they don't have great players. That's what they have to acquire. Stephen A. said it yesterday, too. Julius Randle's their best player. They don't have great players. They don't have a Kyrie Irving. They don't have a Harden. They don't have a Durant. They don't have that great player. And right now they're getting by on guile and defense and playing hard and a commitment to the program put together by Tom Thibodeau, and that's all well and good, and that makes a 500 team. But take a look. They don't beat really good teams. And you can say, well, they beat the Bucs. Yeah, four of their five starters are out that game. They don't really beat good teams. They don't have that oomph to get over the hump. And Knick fans can't be upset about it. I mean, they have to see it for what it is. They just don't have great talent yet.
But they're not getting blown out. This is the second time they came within a shot of beating the Nets. I think there's something to that. This is the best team in basketball, even without Harden in the second half. And also, Harden, what was the streak of consecutive games scoring a point? That ended up getting broken. It's like 860-something games that he went scoring a point. Didn't get to score a point last night because he got pulled from the game. But still, they came close. They play with a lot of heart. Now, eventually, that's all going to go away. They're going to have to start learning how to win these games. But at this stage, I thought that was a good effort.
Well, it shows you how bunched up they are, though, Don, because that loss drops them to eighth now.
I know.
So they're in the play-in now. So they were fourth a week ago. And they've lost four or five. And that's what's going to happen. If you don't get wins against teams that you should get wins against, like Minnesota, then you're going to have to win some of these games that they lose in the last possession. And the reason they lose in the last possession to me is they don't have the great player. You know, a team will just double Randall, and then you don't know if Barrett's going to hit the shot or Quickley's going to hit the shot. They're kids. So the Celtics are now 25-25. The Knicks are 25-26. So they're in the eighth spot.
And that's why Wednesday's game in Boston is so huge. Because now
Celtics are 500, 25-25. Knicks are 25-26.
Right. So right now it's a battle. If you want to try to avoid the play-in, you want to get to six. Well, like right now the Celtics, they've won a couple in a row. They beat the Knicks tomorrow. That's three straight, and now they might be the team. I still think they're going to wake up, Peter. I know you know them better than I do, but I think they're going to wake up. Knicks are going to be in, but that sixth seed, even though it's so close, it's going to be tough to get by just beating the bad teams. They're going to have to start winning some games they're not supposed to if they're going to lock down a six and avoid the play-in. So
yeah,
they got the Celtics coming up on Wednesday. And then what do they have?
I think the Celtics play tonight, too. The Celtics have the Sixers tonight in Boston.
Oh, so maybe you're catching TNT. The Celtics in the right spot, right? Coming off a big game themselves. Get them in the second of back-to-backs.
But the Celtics will probably lose tonight, so it'll be tied at 25-26, both teams, and that's right. A big game tomorrow.
And then you got Memphis.
What an unbelievable drop-off it is after the top three teams in the East. I mean, it's special.
All right, so speaking of basketball, what is Paul Pierce thinking?
How did we not mention this yesterday? Were we still waiting to see it play out?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, for those that don't know, he's been let go by ESPN. He had a good job. He was always on The Jump, which is a really good show. If you're a basketball fan, everybody in basketball watches it. Rachel Nichols does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his job because he was at a party with exotic dancers, and there looked like there were some bubons there as well. And it wasn't like he got burned by somebody else posting
No,
it.
No.
He posted it. I mean,
he went on IG
how brain
Live.
Dead are you?
He went on IG Live, yeah. I
mean, you kind of like forced the hand of your employer. What's ESPN supposed to do? Why would you do that? Oh, like we're impressed because you're with naked girls? Big deal. I would assume that all NBA players at some point have been near naked girls. So you got to IG it live? What are you thinking?
I just
the
don't
truth.
See the benefit.
That's a dumb truth, I'll tell you that.
He's living his truth. His truth is now not working at ESPN. And he was making guys like $1.3 million, something like that. Well over $1 million here. And when it happened, he just posted a video of himself laughing. Now, you've done an amazing job with your life when you can lose $1 million job and not care. And he doesn't have to care from a financial standpoint. And I'm sure someone like Fox Sports will offer him a job.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, first of all, he wasn't that great on the air.
Well, that's the interesting part, right? And I'm a huge Paul Pierce, the basketball player fan. Like, I always thought he was underrated as a player. Was obviously thrilled when they won the championship under his leadership. But, yeah, as a TV personality, I never thought he was special. And he sort of became a big hot take guy. Let me fire up other people by saying something ridiculous or hating on LeBron. So he had a pretty good gig, considering you're right. He wasn't a special broadcaster. And he just, maybe he wanted to leave. Because how could you think that you could get away with mid-COVID strippers and boobange on your IG Live?
I really would like to get into somebody's mind. I'd love to have him on and go, why? Just tell me why. Why would you have to put that on IG Live? It doesn't make sense. So if you like that sort of activity, go do it. See if you can get away with it and you don't get busted in terms of, you know, breaking COVID protocols. But then to put it, it's like you want to get caught. Why? If you didn't like working at ESPN, just quit.
Now, here's the question I'll ask. Based on what was in the activity of the video, if he had come out immediately and made like a really formal apology, do you think he could have survived it?
I think the fact that he posted it, he wouldn't have survived it, even if he apologized. If somebody else posted it, I think he survives.
But just the decision-making, the fact that not only did you do it, but do what you want, but you decided
thought it was a good idea to post it. Yeah. Because, you know, we all work for the man, okay? And you kind of like are representing the brand. So something that I do bad reflects poorly on Yes, and it reflects poorly on ESPN. You don't live in a bubble. So I'm free to do whatever I want. Yeah, but you know what? Your employers kind of take the hit, too, that you're under their employ.
But like you said, if you want to do that, that's fine. Why post it? Again, are we supposed to be like, wow, a former NBA player and a champion is in that situation? You know, shocking. I didn't think he could do it.
Well, and also, is it really impressive when, I mean, anyone can get strippers to come to a party.
Yeah, you have to pay them.
You just need a checkbook.
Now, if Don posted, I think people would be blown away. They'd be like, wow, that's impressive.
You know, one of the first things I got tweeted when this happened, someone sent me the video on Friday or Saturday night, whenever it came out, and said, is this going to be Michael Kay after he starts living his new life?
Dear God.
No, I'll be cool. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break because we have Mel Kiper Jr. coming on. We want to break down the Darnold trade and really get to the bottom of what is Zach Wilson? How good can he be? And Mel's always a great guest, so he'll join us in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so I don't know how many of you saw this, but I tried to read everything about the Sam trade. And Don and Peter, the thing that alarmed me was it came out that Robert Saleh wanted to keep Sam and trade the pick and get a load of picks.
Who's reporting that?
I think I read it in the Post, so it must have been Brian Costello.
Okay.
That's not a great sign. I mean, shouldn't they both be in lockstep? Now, I don't know that if, you know, he said this is the guy, but he felt that he could make it work with Sam. And he, you know, he wants to win right away. So the more draft picks he has, but I don't like the fact that, you know, he didn't think Sam was good. He thought Sam was good. He thought that he could win with Sam. And LaFleur thought that he could win with Sam. So this is totally on Joe Douglas, if that is in fact true, right?
Well, I mean, Saleh had the game plan for him this year, so he knows the quarterback. And, yeah, but he might be motivated by, hey, I want to try to win now. And it might be a combination of Sam, trade, get Pitts, and now you've got all this draft capital plus the best tight end to come out of the college ranks in 20 years, and now they can hit the ground running, go in 2-14, maybe actually compete for a playoff spot now with that extra playoff in each conference. And it just sounds to me like it didn't matter. They're already hell-bent on going with Wilson. So if I'm Joe Douglas and I'm the general manager,
I think this could be a good sign that he's in charge now, that nobody is pulling the strings here. This is who he wants. Now, that doesn't mean Sala doesn't like Wilson, but Sala probably doesn't know Wilson. He's just looking at film just like everybody else is now after he got the job. Up until, basically he got hired, he's been just preparing for NFL games, right? So he might just be going with what he knows, the known versus the unknown, where Douglas and his scouting staff has probably been looking at Wilson all year long.
Well, to what Michael's point was, though, I mean, man, if that was an all Joe Douglas decision, and next year Wilson's a slow starter or just straight up not good, and Sam turns into what every Mel Kiper in the world thinks he's going to, Michael, that all of a sudden Joe Douglas, who it appears has really started to make good decisions for this team, that becomes a monster bad decision.
But that's unfair. Because
why is it unfair?
Well, because, listen, what if Wilson ends up being like Eli Manning in his rookie year, just like a deer in the headlights? Remember, he only came up that 1 year at BYU. You know, so what if it takes him a little while? What if he just has to gradually get better?
I mean, I need Sala and Douglas to be together, because I don't need Sala, sniping at Douglas behind his back if Wilson doesn't turn out to be the quarterback and all of a sudden Sam, prospers in Carolina, then you go backdoor to the Johnsons and then you have another situation. Well, you bring in another GM with a – I need them to be in lockstep. And the fact that they're not in lockstep on this, and I'm not saying they disagreed terribly, but the fact that Sala said keep Sam and trade the pick, that's concerning to me. They weren't on the same page.
It would be more concerning if it was the previous structure of the organization.
Right.
Now it seems more like Joe Douglas is the man, and then the coach answers to him. Not like the other way, where the coach had a direct line to the owner, Woody Johnson.
But, the coach can walk into Woody's office.
And if Woody's got his back and say, listen, Joe Douglas is the guy that makes the decisions. He gets the players, you coach him. Let's go. If that's the case, then it's not really an issue. And if that's the way it was laid out to Sala, listen, you could disagree, but Joe Douglas is the man. The previous way it was done is the coach would go to the owner, the general manager would go to the owner, and they would argue, and it would be like a love triangle trying to figure out what to do. If Joe Douglas is the man, then it really shouldn't matter.
All right, let's hear from Joe Douglas. He was asked if having the second pick had a lot to do with the trade.
Having the number two pick in the draft, I think it's safe to say that, if our pick was a little later, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. We'd fully be comfortable moving forward with Sam. I think there are a lot of discussions that led to this decision, a lot of different rabbit holes that we went down, a lot of productive talks with Coach, with Mike, with Woody and Christopher. That led to this decision. And ultimately, we felt like this was a decision that was best for all parties.
All right, so you wonder if they finished third, if they make this pick, if they had the third pick. So, Don, this is a clear case of FBL, which actually was something that Gettleman suffered. But this is full-blown love. I mean, this is Douglas just falling in love with Zach Wilson.
But this is kind of what we asked for, right? Give me a football guy and let him make the decisions. Like, I would rather it be Joe Douglas is the man and he owns this, rather than it being a collective. Oh, what does Woody think? What does Sala think? And then not everybody be on the same page where they can all go individually to the owner. This is kind of what we asked for. He's in charge. And he's the guy that wants this quarterback. His job's on the line for it. I think Sala should have input, but, even though Douglas has only been here a little while, this is Sala's first head coaching job in the NFL. So, he can have a bit of a say, but he's a defensive coach. And I want this guy. Don't you like the fact he's not being swayed by what the coach thinks or went with a different coach because he disagreed with him about the quarterback? Coach the team. I'm going to get the players, you coach them. Doesn't mean he doesn't like Wilson. It's just that maybe he thought that Sam might have been a better option. We appreciate your opinion, but I'm the general manager. I'm going to do what I think I should do. I don't mind that at all.
Now, he was asked, Joe was, if the Jets failed Sam.
Yeah, I mean, just to piggyback off the last answer, coming off a 2-14 season, there's not a lot of successes. And look, I mean, there's a lot of things go into why this didn't work out. And, you know, ultimately we have to look forward. And like I said, keep bringing in high quality players, high quality people, and drafting and or trading for high caliber people and players moving forward.
I got to tell you this, and you guys know I'm a Joe Douglas fan. They failed Sam, and this will shock everybody, they failed Gase. They put together a team, whether they were tanking on purpose, I hope they were, because if he thought that that was a good team that was good enough to win, then that's a strike against Joe. I think that they were tanking this year and probably tanking for Trevor Lawrence. So Sam didn't have a fair shot, and neither did Gase. As bad of a coach as Gase was, he did not have a team last year that could win. He didn't. That was an awful team, no skill position players. Now, did he use them the right way? No, but he failed them. Joe Douglas failed both of those guys. Maybe he did on purpose. Maybe he wanted to get rid of Gase. Maybe he didn't like Sam. But bottom line is, he did not put a representative team on the field.
Well, the least you could say is that they weren't really focused on 2020. They were playing the long game. They weren't going to spend a lot of money. They were going to wait and spend that money in 2021, whether it was for Sam or for the next quarterback, who knew? I think, you know, you can go into a season trying to get Trevor Lawrence. You're not guaranteed to get him, as we saw. 2-14 wasn't enough. You had to go 1-15 to get it done. And even at 1-15, Michael, I don't think it would have gotten it done. They still would have went to Jacksonville. You would have had to lose every single game. That's a hard thing to do, even for as bad as they were, to go out there and lose every single game. I think they were playing the long game. And we judge Gase on the year before. I know they went 7-9, Michael, but you know they had a lot of patsies in the second half of the season. We had a lot of questions on whether Gase was the guy even going into that second year. So I don't really feel bad that bad for Adam, but I do feel bad that, you know, that they didn't do the best they could to evaluate the quarterback that they had. Now, whether that's because they just were they in love with Wilson before the season even started? When did this full bloom happen? Because if it's all based on the 2020 season of Wilson, how could you have fallen in love with him from what he did in 2019? So this full bloom had to happen during the year, right? So was it all for just tanking for Lawrence? Did they really think that they were going to go 0-16?
Well, I think they were tanking for something, for a great high draft pick, whether or not they thought they'd get the number one pick. I mean, it was a brutally bad team. I mean, you said that's one of the worst teams you've ever seen.
No, it was. You know, I still think they were coached poorly. And I do think that they didn't spend a lot of money. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you were tanking, that you didn't spend a lot of money in free agency, because eventually you're going to have to spend it. And they were obviously saving it for, like I said, the long play. But they did not put a team on the field that you thought was going to be ultra competitive. Maybe not 2-14 bad, but the feeling wasn't that they were going to be putting the best foot forward with what they had.
I don't remember the term ultra competitive being thrown around. By the way, let's just be honest. This is a decent moment because they got a haul for Sam at least, and it's over. But, man, I feel bad for Jets fans. It just feels like this is every year.
Now, Joe was asked about, you know, did they keep Sam in the loop? So I'm interested to see what he said about that.
Yeah, had a great conversation with Sam yesterday. Like I tell you guys all the time, I'm not going to get into the specifics. But Sam's a first-class human being and a pro's pro. And, you know, I really respect Sam, and, you know, I'm rooting for Sam, and I know he's going to be successful.
And finally, was the second pick ever part of trade talks?
Look, there was conversations, with a lot of teams, leading up to yesterday. But I will say that, you know, there was never any meaningful discussions about pick number two.
Now, one guy who supports, I mean, really, really, really supports the trade is Rex Ryan. I don't know if you guys heard him on with Bart and Hahn, and that show's right on before us from 12 to 2. But he gave his thoughts, Rex did, on the Darnold trade.
I think it's great for the Jets. And the reason I say it, you want a guy that's going to win 30-year games? Because that's what Sam Darnold was. But I remember now, I was one of the only guys that warned all the Jet fans that maybe this isn't as good a choice as you think it is. I was all in the Josh Allen corner then, but I think I was the only one. But now it seems like there's a lot of people that claim they were on that same bandwagon, even though it's not the case. But I love being right. I was right on this when I did say that everybody rips Mark Sanchez, but how's he look compared to Sam Darnold?
That's... So he is not a Sam fan at all.
Oh, come God. On.
Well, Rex is a likable guy, his personality. But, like, sometimes it's like, dude, can you stop? Get over it, okay? Your years here are over. No one cares. And, by the way, no one thinks Sanchez is good no matter what you do. In fact, it only makes you look better that you did what you did with Sanchez. Don't make him out to be a hero. You think he stands out above Sam Darnold that much?
But here's the thing, guys. Why does every interview with Rex Ryan have to be about him? What are you bringing Sanchez up for? And by the way, look, Sanchez, I do think he gets bashed unfairly. He was the quarterback of a team that went to back-to-back championship games. But don't compare him to Sam. The Jets did everything to make Sanchez a better quarterback. Look
and
at the trades
they
made. Look at the bringing in Braylon Edwards, bringing in Plaxico Burress. Right?
Bringing in Rex.
Bringing in Holmes.
And Sanchez's first year, the Jets had the number one defense in the NFL. That's why they went to the AFC Championship game, not because of Mark.
Right, but still, look at the players that they went out and acquired to try to make him a better quarterback. They did everything they could. They bolstered the offensive line. They went out and got Alan Faneca, right? You had Damian Woody on that offensive line. You know, they went from Thomas, then they tried to upgrade at the running back position, Plaxico Burress, Braylon Edwards, Santonio Holmes, right? And Sanchez was, you know, a game manager, even with those weapons, and he did a decent job winning those playoff games on the road. You don't think Sam could have done that if he had the weapons and the defense? I don't even why he has to throw that out. I like Rex, I do. But why do you have to do an interview and then all he's got to do is just pepper in all the great things he did? God, is he a me guy.
Rex, you won, man.
You've coached in the NFL. You had a great defense. You're probably one of the great coaches the Jets have ever had. You're a great analyst. Leave it alone. Like Peter said, that was a decade ago. We've moved on.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We'll come back with your phone calls on this. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Don LaGreca, Michael Kay, Peter Rosenberg.
Sure it is.
Yeah, last night was a bit of a letdown with the national championship game, right? What is it about that last game for the perfect season, right? Doesn't matter the sport. You know, Patriots going for the perfect season. We've seen a couple of national championships on the line with UNLV, Kentucky in recent vintage, not being able to win that last one. What is it?
Don, it was last night. Was such a quintessential, in my opinion, highest level letdown. Listen, Baylor's a great team. I mean, they may be the better team, right? And I understand that argument. I mean, they're an incredibly talented team, and they played a perfect game. But you just felt like after Saturday night, which you knew would be the most classic moment, that just had to be part of the Gonzaga undefeated story. Then, if they were to come up short in the final game, Don, I think that would have created some interest and like some, there's something there. But to really be beaten from the opening tip, and they put the effort at the end of the first half to cut it to 10 made you think, okay, we're going to get something here. This is a great setup. But then they never made the comeback in the second half.
And I don't want to be a hater, guys.
No, you never are.
That kind of takes away from how classic Saturday was.
Of course it does.
I kept thinking, you know what? UCLA would have given Baylor a better game. Maybe that's unfair.
I don't think it's unfair. It was fair to think that anyone would have given them a better game.
Now, you know how, I mean, Don, we've been doing this a long time. I hate to criticize broadcasters broadcasting because I know how hard it is. But you can't make your signature call, you know, the rebuild and the rebound. And then
so
not
bad.
Explain that in 2003 when Drew took over, Baylor was a cesspool. A player had killed another player, and the coach tried to cover it up. You can't just drop in, oh, what a rebound and a rebuild. Well, what are they rebuilding from, Jim? I mean, you've got to make that known. Now, if you don't want to touch it at all, then don't make that the call.
But see, that's so quintessential sports, right? That the adversity that you put on yourself now becomes that amazing comeback. No, you did it to yourself, right? You were the cesspool.
They almost abolished the sport at Baylor. They almost abolished the sport.
Right. So it's hard to really give them credit for the rebound when they did it to themselves to put them in that cesspool to begin with.
Again, let me repeat for those that don't know, because you didn't learn it on CBS yesterday. There was a player who killed another player. And then the coach was in the middle of it. That's what they're coming back from. Right. It's nothing like somebody tore his ACL.
I mean, Michael, two things. One, I agree with you completely. If you don't have any context, it doesn't make sense. And also, Andrew, I just said to Andrew off the air yesterday, sometimes these final calls are way over the top, try too hard. And that was just an example of, I was like, oh my, it felt like such an effort. Like, it was just too much. How about the undefeated dream is over? Baylor beats Gonzaga. I mean, it was so deep.
And don't make Baylor out to be like the Saints when they overcame Katrina, you know, or something that unforeseen takes place. I mean, when you are the bad program, don't make it seem like you accomplished anything by, oh, yeah, you corrected it, I get it, but don't make it seem like something arbitrary happened to Baylor. Like Michael said, read the history. It's pretty ugly.
Oh, my goodness. It's one of the ugliest things in college sports history.
But it also has nothing to do with this current team.
Right. 13 years ago, you rebuild and – well, he's been there 17 years. 2003, 18 years.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Drew's been there for a long time. So
– and I'm not blaming Scott Drew for what went on. It wasn't him. He took over a mess. But tell us what the mess was. So people are sitting home, rebuild from what?
It wasn't like you didn't have time in a blowout game to explain it.
And I understand. I mean, you're in agreement with the NCAA. Maybe you don't want to say that. Then don't make it your call.
Yeah. Well, and certainly don't make it seem like, you know, that it was nothing that happened. I mean, just stay away from it. You're right. It's such a bad situation.
I can't believe that Bryce Drew is 46 years old. Wow. That shot was that long ago?
And for those that want to feel badly that Gonzaga, you know, lost an undefeated season, look at it this way. They were supposed to play Baylor earlier in the year in Indianapolis. And they would have won that game, but that game was canceled because of COVID. And Baylor might have been undefeated because they're so good, but they got COVID and shut down for a couple of weeks. And then when they came back, I think they lost two out of the last six games, something like that. So that's why they had losses. But they were clearly the better team. Clearly. They wanted it more, which is a phrase that I hate, but they wanted it more. You just on the opening possession, the offensive rebounds, and they got every 50-50 ball. I mean, Gonzaga wasn't even competitive. They really weren't.
And it really felt like at the beginning of the second half, the door was open on the first few possessions for Gonzaga to cut in. And instead of cutting it from 10 down to 6, it ends up ballooning back up to 15. And then it was, I mean, I don't know, with like 12 minutes left, they started showing the visuals of the Baylor fans celebrating. I was like, oh, my God, we're going to the fans celebrating already? This is over. I mean, there was nothing. It's a great point as to why they could have told the whole story, because there was nothing going on in that second half.
Now, I also felt bad for Nance, who's on the court, and Drew couldn't hear him. I don't know if you guys watched that part. I mean, you might have turned it off after the game was over, but he's interviewing them on the court, and Drew couldn't – what? And then Nance go, I'll get closer. All of a sudden, 6 feet became 4 feet, became 2 feet, and just to be heard. It was a bad setup.
Yeah.
But here's my question. Why do they have to – listen, you guys know I'm a big-time COVID believer. In other words, I'm saying. But that we all know they're all getting tested every single day. Jim Nance, these guys are all in that bubble together. Why can't Jim Nance be 2 feet away from him for the interview? They're all in the stadium together.
How about the other night when Few was standing next to his player and then somebody made them step 6 feet apart? They had just been talking and hugging on the court at the bench.
It's
so a lot of it in David Cone world, it's eyewash to show, look, we're doing something. Well, I mean, but these people are together constantly. They have been tested. So what's the deal?
Right, but that's my point, Michael. Why do we need the eyewash when I think we all believe you guys are going through strict testing protocol? I get it. I don't need the coaches to pull up their masks when their players come near them so I can pretend that they're not all going to the locker room to talk without masks 5 minutes later.
Yeah, it's a good point. But what a letdown. It was a pretty good tournament.
It was a great tournament. I think all things considered, you got to be happy with it. Andrew, you're the biggest college basketball fan amongst us. Did you enjoy the tournament overall? Would you consider it a success?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was just the right amount of upsets early on, but then the big boys still standing near the end to give you – I mean, we wound up in a tournament that is not designed to give you necessarily the best team standing at the end. You got clearly the 1 and 2 at the end of this tournament, and the right team won, I thought, in Baylor. So I thought it was a really good tournament.
That's a great point. And considering we got all those upsets, but like you said, for the most part with the big teams, it was chalk. And you see that. But also, to be done in a year with that many good games and so many major programs missing. You know, how often is it that you're not talking about a really competitive Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina? I mean, UConn wasn't special. So many of the big programs that were accustomed to being power players weren't power players this year. Syracuse, Villanova, they were there, but they weren't special teams.
See, that's my point about Gonzaga, right? Now, they have a pretty good recruiting class coming in, but this was a really good team. If they're not going to win the championship this year without the Blue Bloods in there, with no Kentucky, with no Duke, when are they winning a championship? When?
Great point.
If this is not the year that you win, then you're not going to win. And again, they have a great class coming in, so maybe I'll be proven wrong, but this is the year you had a real opportunity. Real opportunity. 1-800-919-3776. Knicks and Nets, we'll talk about that. And we still haven't hit the Sam Darnold story. By the way, did you see the picture? He didn't seem upset at all about the trade.
I think he's okay.
No, he's good.
Yeah, I think he's good. We'll talk to Mel Kiper Jr. at 4 o'clock. He'll break it down for the people. He's still a Sam fan, but I also believe he's a Zach Wilson fan too. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.